This episode of How Long Gone is brought to you by Nissan. As a pioneer in the electric vehicle space, Nissan is always looking for ways to deliver new, meaningful technologies to EV owners. After all, Nissan has been making EVs since 1947. Their EVs have now traveled 8 billion miles by Nissan Leaf owners since 2010. Yes, my friend, that is 8 billion with a B, the equivalent of driving to Pluto and back, which is not a real planet. Think that's electrifying? One of their EVs trekked all the way to the North Pole, where all the underground government military bases are run. And Nissan even tests their EV technology on the Formula E racetrack.
But Nissan knows that you don't get an EV just for the E. You get a Nissan EV because it makes you feel electric, because it sparks your imagination, it ignites something within you, it pins you to your seat, and it takes your breath away. At least that's what Nissan thinks about when designing their EVs, like the Nissan Ariya and the famous Nissan Leaf. It's about creating a thrilling design that electrifies its customers. Nissan's focus on creating a thrilling drive and an electrifying life. In today's world, it's so important to look around you, to pay attention, to look for all the tiny ways life can electrify you. I like to feel electric by going to dinner, trying new foods, and then being late to my own podcast recording so that my host gets mad at me. But we recover because I never do that. So every once in a while, I need to electrify my life.
That's called edging.
Nissan EVs that electrify.
How Long Gone is here, zipping over to the home studio. A little bit of a shaky morning. What's up, Chris? How are you?
I'm shaky morning. I'm a shaky warrior as well. I kind of had a late night last night, so it's I don't like staying up till 1 a.m. on a school night. But
neither
I. Duty calls. You got to do it.
Well, I mean, you had a big night, so I think it was well worth it. You weren't wasting your 1 a.m. night on some bullshit.
It was in the words of my companion for the evening and host Nomi Fry, what a night it was. You know, there's not a greater feeling than walking into Madison Square Garden, emptying your pockets to make sure you don't have a gun on you, zipping right to the will call. You know, there's no hiccups. They give you your John Mayer solo tour laminates. You head to your seats and you just take in 2 hours of Mayer solo, just him.
2 hours solo?
Bro, this motherfucker did, yeah, I bet he did an hour and 45, just him. Guitar, different guitars and a piano. That's it. And it was like, he had him eating out of his hands.
Of course, of course. And I'm sure the mid-song banter was exquisite.
Well, he actually did some stuff that was pretty cool. He showed like unseen old video footage like before some of the songs. So like him,
that'll
like
kill some time.
First record, like about to go on his first tour, you know. But he also did a lot of funky stuff with looping and a double neck.
He's on his little Ed Sheeran, little Les Claypool.
He went Sheeran mode on the.
He didn't go Primus mode.
I know. Nomi was like, look at the double neck. It's like Richie Sambora, and I'm like, exactly. Yeah, exactly what it is.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah, he would play the 12. He would like play the 12 string and like loop it and then play the other part over, you know, on the regular six string. Yeah. But it worked really well, and it made it feel like meaty.
Like a London busker.
Exactly.
In the tube channel.
But yeah, and then
okay, that sounds great. Where'd you said I remember the last episode you said you were gonna take her out to dinner beforehand. Where'd you guys go?
We hit an ABC kitchen, a classic ABC kitch before some delicious sunchokes on the menu. as well as my favorite carrot avocado salad. And we both had a nice piece of fish, and we did go for the cookie plate. I had to twist her arm a little bit.
You guys were good. You guys were good for the premium and the Segundi. I think you deserve a cookie plate.
But we had to go to the after party, and it was at,
I'm sorry,
Teresi, which is like, it's, you know, it's like a Carbone major food group place, but they've reopened. It used to be like a tasting menu thing on Mulberry, but now it's in a different location.
I used to love it. It was amazing back in the day.
I mean, we got there at 11:30 and it was fucking packed. Like people
small eat. Room too.
No, it's new now. That's what I'm saying. It's huge.
Oh, okay.
And got it. And I mean, of course, they're playing hip hop, which I tried to. I walked into Grindin' by Clips, with my with my ravioli. But
bummer.
So we go to the back room. You know, Mayor shows up, and we sit down, and it's me, Nomi, Mayor, Andy Cohen, my North Star,
and a bottle of 1942. That was it, brother.
Yeah, exactly. It was this is my barbershop LeBron show. Uh-huh. And then, you know, they're all kissing his ass. Oh, it was so great. And I'm like, yeah, it was good. But John, you didn't sweat at all. Like, he wasn't sweating at all. And I noticed he didn't change clothes. Mm. After doing 2 hours on stage under the bright lights in Madison Square Garden, this man didn't sweat. And he was like,
the Grateful Dead effect. He's a conditioned warrior. That's why.
No, he said to me, he was like, you know what it is? I think it's because when you're playing acoustic, it's like a different, it's like the energy is less like frenetic and I'm not moving in the same way. Mm. And it's just like, it's different. But he's like, I noticed that too. Cause usually these guys come off the stage, you got to shower. It's a whole thing.
I mean, also he's a cool as a cucumber kind of guy. So what, with Andy Cohen, who sat on who lap?
Well, he's a little smaller than me, so he sat on my lap.
Okay.
He was asking about How Long Gone, and we were talking about kind of his Sirius XM channel.
I didn't know he has one.
Yeah, he's got Andy Radio. Dude, he's got like a whole, I mean, he does a show. He was explaining to me, he's like, yeah, I do it 4 times a week. One time is live, then I record one. He goes, like, I go in almost every day. But he's got like a network that
4 times a week.
He's on his like Seacrest shit where it's like every second of his day he is doing something productive and making money. And it's like, and otherwise he's like off a gummy ordering a Negroni.
Is it really called Andy Radio?
No, it's probably called something different, but it's probably not far off from Andy Radio.
Okay. It's probably called the Cohen Zone.
Exactly. We're talking about the ins and outs of it and just, you know, the differences between, you know, that kind of setup and podcasting. Mm-hmm. But then we got into the real meat of the situation where he was sort of wanted to talk a little bit more about Vanderpump Rules, you know, and kind of the drama going on there.
Sure.
Which I obviously won't divulge. But the one thing I want to say, because I sat next to Andy at the show, and I have never seen people act this unhinged around a celebrity in maybe in my life.
Really?
Like, people could not control themselves. Like, women were like walking, like stepping over Nomi and I, like mid show, to take a dark selfie with him while he was trying to watch the show.
So he's just like a human Birkin bag.
Like, I've never seen anything.
Women
like
are
that.
Drawn to him.
They're drawn to him. I mean, as Nomi said, this crowd is full of excitable white people, which is like the right crowd, obviously, for him and his business and what he does.
I love the word excitable. It's so vague and so specific at the same time.
No, it's perfect. But yeah, so I was just like sitting there and I was like, wow, this is crazy. And Nomi was like, yeah, this is like what it's like. He's like the most beloved man, you know, on earth, because he gives people so much high quality entertainment. And it all makes sense to me, but I was like, I didn't know it was like, this guy needs a security guard, you know? Like, it's like, people could not control themselves.
He's walking around Madison Square Garden like Kim Jong-un.
No, dead ass. He really is. Like, he went to the bathroom and I was like, bro, do you need me to escort you? Not for that. I just mean for safety. Like, I feel like you might.
He's like, oh, Chris,
actually, sure. If you don't mind.
But no, I'm good right now.
If you don't mind walking me, that'd be great. You could just stand outside.
Took you long enough, Chris. What took you long enough?
But yeah, it was really interesting to see how people, because I mean, obviously I know he's quite famous for his work and like he's on TV every night because he has a live show and the whole thing. But like, I also think he feels approachable, you know, in a way, because of how he talks and like how he does things, sure, which maybe makes it worse on him. You know what I mean? Whereas like Mayor is like a god walking through and people are a little bit shocked to see him somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little bit of a different energy, but I was blown away.
Andy taught the world how to kiki.
Exactly. No, he really did. But I didn't get home till 1 a.m., bro. And you know, the alarm goes off at 6, you know what I'm saying? So it's been.
Yeah. I've been waking up hella early lately, bro. I've been waking up at like 5.
Are you off the pack or are you on the pack?
On the pack.
Interesting. I mean,
I worry that I'm waking up too early.
Yeah, I mean, that happens. I went through a phase, like I was getting up at like 4:45 or 5, and I was like, this is too much. Like, I don't, because in LA it's fine because like there's some action because the East Coast has been awake for a little while. But in New York, it'd be crazy.
Oh, yeah, that's
like,
true.
Like, in New York, getting up that early, you're talking to nobody.
Dry as hell.
Not that you have things going on that early. I don't think that kind of people in your world, you know, are up and grinding. Maybe I'm wrong.
No. All the people in my life are so sleepy and unsuccessful.
Well, you're just more... No. I don't mean like that. You just run with a more of a late-night crowd. That's all.
Also, shout out to the... Happy Nowruz to the Persian homies listening.
Oh, hell yeah.
Big over here. I went to Rafi's.
Yeah, is that how you celebrated? With some Rafi's?
No, there's a traditional... I mean, you kind of celebrate by having, you know, like most holidays. I think you just have like, you know, a big dinner and a feast and a celebration of blah, blah, blah. And but the main thing I think with it is you ceremoniously jump over a fire.
So you're saying that MTV2's The Challenge stole that whole bit from the Persians?
I think the Persian version is a little less death-defying and a little more of just, you know, let's
like
light
nice.
A couple small twigs, like a campsite fire that you could easily kind of jump over without having to go to the hospital
that's
or something.
Good. That's
you know?
Good. I don't want anybody dying out there for it.
No. You know, we need grandmas and stuff to do it. So it's got to be pretty easy.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's like the limbo.
I don't want to flame Nana.
It's like doing the limbo at the family reunion. The bar ain't going that low.
Yeah, you know.
It's going to be, we can all make it under.
That's right.
I can't wait to hit LA and I'll come to Glendale for some Raffies. It's been a while.
Had some beautiful fish, Chris. You would have loved it. But it was also raining.
Well, it's not raining now, right?
No, but it's dreary as, man.
It's dreary, bro. It's fucking dreary. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. The sun is out in Manhattan today. I have to head into the J. Crew World headquarters.
Okay.
I'm going to an Audemars event with Sam Hine that is hosted by John Mayer. It's two nights in a row.
Jeez,
which
Louise.
Is, you know, feels a little extreme, but Sam's taking me to some new hot steakhouse in Brooklyn.
Wow. Chris, you're doing a lot of un-Chris things, I gotta say.
What in what way?
Going to a steakhouse in Brooklyn. For a person who's allergic to Brooklyn and a vegetarian or a vegan,
but you know, but
vegan
you,
Brooklyn hater.
No, but it's like a thing. It's like a place. I'm looking up the name of it now. It looks amazing. Like it looks really pretty. Gage and Tolner is what it's called.
Gage and Tolner.
Yeah.
Speaking of apothecaries,
I know it does. It does feel like a nice cedar wood.
These motherfuckers make beard oils.
Yo, your mustache ain't twisty anymore. Look, come over here. No, but Sam has some juice there, I think. So we're gonna have a little catch up across the bridge. Even mm-hmm. though both of us don't live there, it must be pretty good.
You're gonna order 7 shrimp cocktails as your main course.
They do have a shrimp cocktail as well as a salmon. It's just every restaurant's the same, bro. It's absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
Every restaurant for white people is truly the same. It costs $300.
that was an important stipulation.
Costs $300 no matter what. Everybody has 2 glasses of wine, shrimp cocktail, Caesar salad, steak, or fish. It's literally like it's the 1950s. And you know, I'm not mad about it personally.
No.
And I don't think you are either.
I'm not mad either. It's a reaction to small plates and shared thingies and chef specials and blobity.
Yeah.
Convoluted menus. This is what happens when you go too far.
Let's go too far.
You happy now? Line cooks? You happy now? FX is the bear?
Look what you did at FX is the bear. All right. We do have a guest today. Cord Jefferson is a writer in the Hollywood space.
Mm-hmm.
Him and I we've been circling each other for a while. He's friends of a lot of friends.
Pause.
Very bright guy, very successful. And I can't wait to dig into the ins and outs of the underbelly of dirty Hollywood with a true insider.
Emmy Award winner. He wrote on some of Chris's favorites, The Watchmen, Succession, The Good Place. He's got a new movie that he pitched and sold and filmed over COVID that's coming out and who knows when. He's a Silver Lake bro. Funny guy, cool guy, smart guy. Great to have him on the pod. So let's give Cord a jingle. Nobody loves, I mean, if you like the Turkish getup, you're doing that so you don't murder, you know?
let me say something, not to blow your minds, guys, but I don't mind the Turkish getup. I think the challenge involved is nice for my mental and physical. And I think that it's a great full body exercise. It's not top of mind, like number one choice, but I think there's things I would rather do less.
Sort of Chris admitting that he's a murderer or murderer.
No, I mean,
in so many ways.
I've never killed anyone. I've got a lot of problems, obviously, but I think all three of us do, you know, without without Cord chiming in yet. I'm sure he has problems.
Absolutely.
You've killed it at the gym, though, at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, that's what is your now? What is your level of get up, Cord? Like, what are you? Have you done a lot of them? Is it something new?
I've been going to Pharaoh's. Do you guys know Pharaoh's?
Oh, yeah, I know the gay gym over there in Echo Park. Yeah, yeah. So I've heard of that before.
I've been going to Pharaoh's.
Gay and rich, Chris. Gay and rich.
That's true.
Not all gays. Bodybuilders closed. Bodybuilders gym closed. The destruction of the gay middle class continues.
Did bodybuilders actually close?
Yeah, bodybuilder. Well, they're looking for a new space, but that one on Hyperion's gone.
That was my spot for years when I visited LA, and I loved. I mean, I never went in the bathrooms there, obviously, but I loved the vibe of the. Like, it was just so shitty.
Yeah. It was great. It's just like dusty free weights and like some machines, and that's it. I sort of liked that.
But there would always be some kind of power players, some East Side power players in the building.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there would always, I'd always see some actors, you know, guys I recognized, and I'm like, I know you have more money than this.
There'd be a member of local natives up in there putting up numbers.
Yeah, there's a guy, local natives, holding up everything on the fucking fly
machine. Manzoukas is in there getting reps.
The best sighting I ever had there was Zach De La Roca.
Okay. I know that you're
East Side legend.
Cord, I know that you're rich. He's much more rich than you. Why are you guys going to a gym that costs $27 a month?
Yeah, like what the fuck?
And like you have to wear like non-slip shoes because there's so much cum on the floor.
You gotta wear kitchen. You gotta wear chef's clogs.
I have no $1 million, and I go to Equinox, guys. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I think that for me, Equinox becomes less about the actual gym, right? It's like they have like good products in the bathroom and shit like that, and there's like smoothie bars.
Sure.
So like, I feel like yes, I understand the allure of that, but for me, it was close to my house. I could just walk there and get it done and be done with it for the day. Like, I don't want to drive to Equinox. I don't want to deal with parking.
I mean, do you go to the Four Seasons because the conditioner is dope? I don't think so. It's a nice icing on the cake, but it doesn't get the ball across the field.
I have to side with both of you here, because in LA, I go to Equinox in New York, and in LA, I go to Easton, which is kind of like a bodybuilders, but I would say 30% better in West Hollywood. So the crowd is different, if you know what I'm saying.
It's bodybuilders Lux, bodybuilders XL, you know, however you want to put it in Uber terms.
Yeah, yeah. It's a similar old and dusty free weights vibe, but it's basically only fellas, which I really like. It's just like it's just a very weird time capsule. But Equinox, I've been going a lot in New York, and it's starting to depress me. I have to say, it's weird. I need a little more character.
It sounds like there's too many women there, Chris. Is that the issue?
No. I mean, that could be the issue.
Too many perfect 10 models there?
No, not at all. It's more just like the smell of it.
Okay.
I don't like the smell of it. Like when I walk in, because it's like a hotel, they like pump in the smell and the sound.
Smelling like pussy up in there, huh?
No, it is. No, that's not
gym smells.
That is
like
not
pussy.
What I'm saying. It smells like fucking it smells like banker feet mixed with, you know, mixed with like kind of Axe body spray mixed with Aesop. You know what I mean? It's like a very strange.
Nobody's using Axe at the fucking New York Equinox, bro. Come on.
You're absolutely wrong, Jason. And you don't understand. Cord, you lived in New York, right?
I lived in New York for 7 years. Yeah.
Okay. There's a lot of guys here, Jason, and it is hard to wrap your head around because it feels odd. But guys that make a ton of money that like have a beautiful apartment with bad furniture and a hot girlfriend and probably a Range Rover, mm-hmm. they still get all of their apothecary products at the drugstore. 100%.
Dwayne Reed. That's absolutely right.
Yeah, exactly. They're using Pert Plus.
They don't know what apothecary means.
They think I'm talking that Spanish again, you know? And I'm telling you that,
Yeah, it's translation to like the bitch aisle at Dwayne Reed.
Exactly. But it's a very strange, you see them unpack their gym bag and you're just like, bro, what? Like, you don't have a woman in your life, a man in your life, a goddamn brother or sister to help you out here. But it's like,
you don't follow me on Tumblr?
Exactly. What the fuck, bro?
Who does your soap program?
Cord could back me up on this. It's like a type of guy here. It's like a type of guy in New York.
So I never, when I lived in New York, I didn't really have any money. So I sort of like lived most of my New York years in like broke New York, where it was like sort of toward the end I started to have some money, but I wasn't in a place like where I was around those people much of the time. It was basically just like fucking in Bushwick and like South Williamsburg and Greenpoint. Like, so I never got the experience of like New York with money.
I'm sorry you had to go through that, Cord.
No. I'm like, but I think that New York really is a place where, you know, every place is different if you have money, but I feel like New York is the difference between like having money in New York and not having money in New York.
Yeah,
is like for sure. Vast. It becomes sort of like a totally different.
This is why I shoplift.
Yeah, but this is the problem with. I mean, that's the whole thing, though. Is like, I think that there's there's nowhere better to be filthy rich than New York.
Oh yeah,
there's nowhere absolutely. Where it benefits you more. There's nowhere that benefits you more. Than here, and I think that is something that is powerful and keeps me striving for the top.
And there's something more kind of exciting about flexing on somebody in person versus behind a car window or something, like to where that person could spit on you.
Yeah.
And you're still flexing on them. It's more visceral. They could punch you. All that stuff.
Yeah, they're not going to punch out the window of the G-Wagon at the stoplight. That's probably not going to happen.
Bulletproof.
You know? Yeah, exactly. Mine's bulletproof. I'm glad you remember that.
I'd like to see you try.
Did you move to LA because work started popping, or were you like, I'm done with this bullshit, I need some sunshine?
No, I've been back. So I'm from Arizona originally.
Another thing I'm sorry you had to go through. So I'm glad you made it out.
I appreciate that. Tucson. No, but so I, right after college, I moved to LA, and then I moved with my girlfriend at the time to New York from LA, and then we broke up and I moved to DC, and then I was in DC for like 18 months. And then from DC, I moved back to LA, and then I moved back to New York for work. And then I moved back to LA in 2017.
Bro, what?
So I had one girlfriend who lived in Venice. And I lived in Silver Lake at the time. That was like a long distance relationship.
That ain't gonna work.
It was terrible. And I'm not really like a West Side guy though. I kind of hate the West Side. It's not for me.
Welcome home, brother.
I don't go to the East Side. I'm all set on the East Side.
Really?
I'm all set. I would rather go to Brentwood than Silver Lake at this stage of my life. And say what you want about me.
Well, Chris never leaves West Hollywood. Chris doesn't. He doesn't go to Santa Monica or Venice or Marina Del Rey. He just stays in WeHo.
Why?
You're not the first person to say that, Cord.
The dick wants what the dick wants, you know?
Exactly. No, it's just, I say this, I actually said this to someone last night. I've been around cool guys my entire fucking life. That is my job. That is what I do every day. I don't need to do that when I'm going, I don't want to see people I know at the fucking grocery store. I don't want to have to build with someone at the fucking gas station. You know what I mean? And in West Hollywood, I can walk into anywhere and not know anybody, and it's preferred. I don't see guys in online ceramics. You know what I mean? I've escaped kind of what you, it sounds like you thrive in.
But when you socialize, like when you go to parties or you go to restaurants to meet your friends, like, is it generally on the East Side?
No.
He makes me drive to the San Vicente bungalows fucking 45 minutes exactly. from Glendale to go eat some gazpacho.
Jason loves the soups at San Vicente Bungalows. What could he say?
The food at San Vicente Bungalows is not very good.
That is very correct.
Everybody says this, and I don't think it's wrong, but then you go to all the five other restaurants in LA that people like, and it's the same exact fucking food. It's the same food at all these places. Like, maybe Sunset Tower's 2 degrees better, maybe Grill in the Alley's 3 degrees better, but it's the same food. It's the same
menu. The same as the Tower for me. Yeah, I agree with you, Chris.
I think the Tower is a little bit better. Tower is a little bit better, but only slightly.
Only slightly.
It's so strange because I never thought I would end up in West Hollywood, but then I realized that, much like in New York, I'm like a Soho mindset, you know? That's like what I would live above Uniqlo on fucking Broadway. Like, I want to be right in the center of it.
That's so crazy.
I'm just also, guys, let's digress. I feel like all the poor people listening are starting to tune out this conversation a little bit too much as we kind of complain about five-star restaurants.
No. I just mean I think it's like I never lived in Brooklyn because I was like, that's not why I moved here. That's not New York. That's the different thing. It's not even shade. It's like fucking nice. Like, Brooklyn Heights is nicer than anywhere in Manhattan now. It's just not for me. I'm just not interested.
If we're going to do it, let's do it.
You want a little separation from church and state.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like, I just feel like Silver Lake is actually feels, yes, there is kind of some element of like Hollywood people here, but it's a different kind of entertainment people than you'll find in West Hollywood and Hollywood and the East and the West Side. I just feel like that's, it's a lot of agents. And I think that just sort of like, and like, you know, I just feel like the celebrity contingent is very, very high there and very intense in a way that like, it's kind of like the way that you don't want to sort of like run into people at the grocery store. It's a, like, I don't want to run into people that I would.
Same for you. Oh, I see.
In West Hollywood.
That actually, that's a nice parallel. Yeah. That's a nice parallel. That
yeah. I don't want to run into like agents and stuff when I'm running errands and having to talk about work all the time.
He wants to run into Adam Scott at Gelson's, and that's about yeah, as far as it goes.
That's where I draw the line. Unfortunately, Cord, I think if I would have made a few different decisions in my life, I would be an agent and I would be the enemy. And thank God that I'm considered by some, not listeners of this podcast, but some to be the talent in this particular instance. So I dodged.
Chris, think of yourself as an unpaid enemy for now.
Yeah, I'm an unpaid enemy. I don't have a Black 3 series. Thank God. I've done, you know, I made
it's
some
great exposure though.
It's great exposure. I mean, our agents, you know, people in Hollywood, people like you, they love to complain about the agent, you know, and I feel like the agent is, though a beloved necessary evil that is so fun to make fun of, but without them, I feel like you would all make a lot less money. You have to agree with that.
But you guys have agents now too, don't you?
Yeah, yeah, we do.
Yes, we do.
What agency are you guys at?
CAA. Shout out to the homies at CAA.
I'm a CAA guy too. There
Let's
we go.
Go.
Keep it in the family.
I feel like you get invited to a few more of the parties than we do, but yeah.
I want
to
be clear to everyone listening. This is not a package put together by our agents. Cord and I know each other socially a little bit. We're not working on a project yet. Hopefully we can kind of get there with something like this.
Even I don't believe that. I feel like this is a package.
No, this is not a package.
That's no, I think that, agents to me are... I don't even think they're an evil. I like my agents. I think they do great work for me. I just think that some agents do get a bad rap, but some agents really are just ceaselessly annoying. Like yeah, just, they can only talk about work.
Sure.
They can only talk. They can only sort of like they can't. I don't like anybody that's always on. So like if I'm like comedians, like if you're a comedian and like you're always doing bits and shit, I can't deal with it. And the same goes for like Hollywood people. And it's like agents. There's some agents who the only thing they can fucking talk about is business and money and who's hiring who and who's working where. And I just can't deal with it. But yes, I mean, I do think that my agents have been helpful in making me more money. Yes, that's true.
Well, I guess the question is, I guess, because I was talking about this yesterday with Michael Haney, who came on the podcast recently, and he's working on some stuff. And I guess I'm just trying to understand that, like, I feel like in my understanding, in the old days, they were a little more like aware of the creative. They like would really read it and kind of some the good ones would have like real understanding of the creative part of it, like how this is going to work and who should do what and all of that stuff.
Whereas our first agent never listened to our podcast.
Yeah, but I guess I'm asking if is that still the case? Like, is that what makes good versus bad? Like someone who actually understands and reads the work and gets it versus someone who's like, yeah, I don't know, bro. I'm just going to get you the most money possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's what you want to get, right? I think that there's some people who just want, like, I have homies who are just like, I just want a fucking shark. Like, I want somebody who's going to get in there and scream at people until they agree with my demands, until they give me the money that I want.
The only way I can climax.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that for me, the reason I chose my agent is because the first agent that I met with ever when I was leaving journalism to work in TV, he was like, why do you want to write TV? And I was, you know, I gave him all these like high-minded ideas of like, I want to try writing fiction and like, you know, I'm just interested in like this fictional storytelling. Like it was like, I can't remember exactly what I said, but I sort of went through this like long-winded description about creativity. And then he like hit me on the shoulder and he was like, and you want to make some real fucking money for once, huh? And I was like, all right, man. No, that's not really what I was thinking, but sure. And it just kind of creeped me out. And then the next person that I met with was a younger agent, and she was sort of like had just been promoted. And like we sat down and talked, and like we didn't, she just talked to me about like plays that she liked to read and sort of like and shows that she liked. And then the next day, she sent me a bunch of like plays that she enjoyed and like a bunch of books that she enjoyed. And it was just like about the work. And I felt like, you know, only I don't need somebody to like pretend that they love art and that they're in it for the art. Cause like, let's get real. This is a business and we all like to like make good living.
Yeah.
But I just needed like some of that. Just like indulge me a little bit. You need- like care about what I'm making and not just like you just care about how much fucking money we're gonna make together. That's
you needed all. you needed to be sure that the agent could actually read.
At yeah, least exactly.
We can start there at the and we'll go
exactly. I'll settle for a crumb of intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. I'll settle for just a little bit. I mean, yeah. I think that the TV, you've been part of kind of the you know, you've been timing wise part of like the explosion of TV, I feel like, where it's like, this is the most important thing in our culture. This is all anybody talk besides NBA Youngboy. This is all anybody talks about. And it's like all anybody cares about. And I guess I'm just like, is it hard? Is that almost detrimental? Does that make your job harder or does it make it more exciting?
I think it makes it less exciting. I mean, I love how much you hate on TV, by the way. It is very funny.
No problem. I'll continue to do so.
It's a real bugaboo for you, but
massive bugaboo.
if you're I actually think the golden age of TV is dead, like long gone. I think that you know, I can get into a whole rant about this, but I think that tech people have come in and sort of ruined what existed. I think that our reliance on like algorithms and making as much like it's like almost like fucking like content wars where it's just like nobody even cares the quality of anything anymore. It's just about
numbers.
It's just about getting as much as possible out there and like let's put out 52 new shows a year. And it's like I just think that all of that has sort of diminished the quality of what television actually is. And I think that that's why we're seeing so much of it is exactly the same. Like I think that movies and TV shows about like the lives of the 1% and like hedge funders and, you know, like media billionaires, like it's just I'm not saying that these things are bad. I'm just saying that, like, you know, this year gave us it's like The Menu and Triangle of Sadness and, you know, Succession, obviously, and Billions. And it's just I just feel like all of this stuff is starting to feel, you know, I think that people are running out of original ideas. And I think that that's what the deal is with the IP boom, too. It's like everybody's trying to, you know, it's like, look, I have not seen the Night Court reboot and maybe it's good. And like, I'm happy for him. But I'm like, do we really need the Night Court reboot? Like, it's like, was this.
Can you improve on the original? I don't think so. Yeah.
I that wasn't kind of considered. That's not Cheers. You know what I mean? That wasn't considered one of the great works of that time.
Night Court is a prime example. That's a great case study of like, all right, guys, this is a little.
Yeah, what are we doing?
But is it really just like the powers that be are looking at that at this like, I just don't want to start from scratch. It's too risky. Is that
the
mindset?
I think it's risk management. Yeah, it's just too risky. You can't afford a failure.
Yeah, everybody's just risk averse. Nobody wants to lose their jobs. And it's like, you know, so like I went into a meeting, you know, this, I think this was like 6 or 7 months ago. And somebody was like, you know, we're just looking for our Bridgerton. And I was like, aren't you fucking embarrassed to be saying like, aren't you embarrassed to talk like that? Like your Bridgerton, you don't have Bridgerton because somebody else made that. So like, why don't you make a show that's like original? And I think that that to me is what's lost now. It's like, I don't think that if somebody came to HBO to pitch The Sopranos today or anywhere really, if somebody had The Sopranos script to pitch to Netflix or whatever, they'd be like, okay, the script is interesting, but we need Robert De Niro to play Uncle Junior.
Yeah.
And we're gonna need Scorsese to direct the pilot, and we're gonna need to, like, it's just like they need everyone.
Where's Ratajkowski gonna fit in here?
Yeah, exactly. Ratajkowski has to be a Guma, at least like maybe like Christopher's Guma. Like it's it just feels like it's so like if you talk to people and you say like what are the greatest shows and sort of like the canon of TV, like right, like people are going to basically agree on like, you know, the top
Married
five
with Children,
Married with Children, Night Court.
The list goes on.
They're going to say The Sopranos. They're going to say Mad Men. They're going to say Breaking Bad.
The Wire.
They're going to say The Wire. And it's like, if you go onto every single one of those IMDb pages for the pilots of those shows, you cannot name a single famous person in any of those shows. Like nobody knew who the fuck James Gandolfini was, like a bit part dude from like Get Shorty. And like, you know, nobody knew who the fuck John Hamm was. Like these were just, talented people, like good actors, good writers who put something together and sort of like made something great. And like nowadays, that's not, nobody has the gall to sort of like try anything that might be risky.
And at the beginning of a lot of those shows, the actors weren't even talented half the time, but they grew. But I mean, they became amazing.
It takes time.
You know, they were moldable.
Truly.
Whereas nowadays, nobody's moldable. It's like, oh, De Niro's going to be the De Niro guy. Oh, he killed it as De Niro guy, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, I actually think that like, we have more TV than ever, but I just think that it's the quality is just increasingly worse and worse and worse. Just because.
Do you think we're ever going to be able to have like heirloom television or artisan? You know, like I'm just looking at through food things. Like we're just building things for volume and money, but not for quality or flavor. Like, is there going to be like a resurgence of? I mean, a TV costs so much money to make. Like, how do you...
Do you watch TV, Jason?
I do watch TV. Not a ton, but definitely more than Chris.
Hey, I want to be clear. I watch more TV than a lot of
Chris
people.
Chris watches a lot of only, Bravo and stuff like that.
It's only on the Bravo network. Yeah,
Chris is a fan of unscripted content.
We're learning about unscripted a lot in our kind of day-to-day lives, and I realize that's kind of my thing, you know?
Yeah, Chris has found that scripts just get in the way.
No offense. Like, you do great work, but it kind of mucks up the process. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's necessary all the time is all I'm saying.
I think that the pendulum just always swings back and forth, right? And so I think that right now we're in a stage when there's just like a glut of like bad shit and people really don't have any new ideas and they're kind of struggling and spinning their wheels. But I think that, and I think that you're seeing sort of, you know, I think you're seeing people less interest, you know, it's like Netflix all of a sudden is losing subscribers and that's never happened before. And like people are tapping out and saying like, yeah, I don't fucking care. So I think that eventually it's going to come around and people are going to go like, oh, okay, maybe it's time to sort of like actually focus. Like that's another thing too, is like things have gotten so expensive. It's like so stupidly, like it's like every movie now is $150 million.
Don't come for the canceled Nancy Meyers rom-com at Netflix. They just shut down because the budget.
Wait a minute. Well, I didn't hear about this. What's this? I didn't hear about this.
130.
It was at 130 and she was like, I need more bread. And they were like, all right, we're done.
A Nancy Meyers movie for $130 million?
With no theatrical release.
Yeah.
But that's, I mean, I'm sure she was getting some heavy hitters in the bill. Obviously, you know, it's like,
of course,
that's all got to be talent. I mean, yeah, but still, it's insane.
But that's crazy. And I just think that we need to get to a place now when it's like, instead of making one $150 million movie, why not make like 10, $15 million movies? Because the likelihood that one of those is going to really pop off and make a bunch of money for only $15 million is very high. Like,
I mean, Woody Allen's been doing that for 50 years, huh?
I mean,
nobody makes a fucking $8 million movie better than Woody Allen.
Truly.
I don't agree with all of his practices, but
not every, we can't everything. No, of course.
Just from an economic standpoint, it makes sense.
We're talking about economic. We're P&L guys. You know that. I think what it reminds
ROI,
me,
ROI, et cetera.
What you're saying though reminds me of kind of the way, not to bring it back to the cursed tech world, but like the way that those investors are like, I'm gonna invest in 10 things, 100 things. If one hits, I'm good. The other ones don't matter. It doesn't matter. And it's but it is, I mean, it seems better from a risk perspective to kind of spread it out with things you believe in and give more people chances, because you're right. Something's going to probably hit if you do it right.
I mean, that's like Blumhouse's mentality. Yeah. You know, that's what their whole thing is. Like sometimes you put out like a horror movie that nobody sees, but then sometimes you get a Get Out for $5 million.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it changes. It's that's I feel like that's one of the last movies that's actually like changed entertainment in a very real way. Like it's like all the sort of like fake Jordan Peeles have come out of the woodwork and are doing their thing. But he's like, I feel like Get Out actually like changed the face of entertainment in a real way. And I think that more people just, you know, Barbarian, that movie cost $4 million. And I think it made like $55 million at the box office before it even went on to HBO Max. And so I just think that people need to start betting on people who haven't made a huge name for themselves but have good ideas and are smart, and you know, and you just give them $5 to $10 million and like let them try something and see if it works.
But I just don't even think I mean, and you know this better than we do, of course, but I just think the people that control the money are just, like you said, they want a job.
Yeah.
Like they're just, and if they go to their boss and they're like, this is what I want to do, and the boss doesn't see
an end result that's very, very clear. You know, the deck is stacked in their favor. They just won't do it.
Yeah, or but the thing is like nowadays too, the thing that should sort of like convince them to just take shots is like there is no sure things anymore. Like Babylon, like fucking
yeah.
If you say Babylon, you're gonna make a movie with Brad Pitt, Margot Robbie.
Did Babylon not do well?
Are you serious?
No.
Oh.
Don't make me bring up Glass Onion, Cord. Don't make me bring up Glass Onion, bro.
Glass Onion was low-key kind of not bad, bro.
T Street, Ryan Johnson's company is producing my movie. They're wonderful. I thought Full Glass disclosure. Onion was amazing. Ryan and Ryan.
More like glass shallot. Ryan's all those flavorful complexities, you know. Didn't have to be that good.
All those flavorful components.
I agree. I liked it, but I just think that like that
Babylon
movie,
didn't do well. You know, that, is what you're saying?
No, not only did it not do well. It was that should have been a fucking like that on paper. That's like a hit. It's like Damien Chazelle's fucking won all these Oscars. Yeah, he's got these movie stars in it. On paper, it's like this is going to be massive. And then, I read that they spent like in through production and like marketing. I think that was like around 250 or 200, like 200 upwards of $200 million. And like I think last I checked, it had made like $12 million at the box office, which is like
that's very bad. Yeah, that's like,
and that movie was not any worse than any like Tom Cruise, you know, whatever movie or like any Bond movie or any.
It just didn't work.
It just didn't for whatever reason. It didn't work, and so the idea that like
because the font thing, was too
the
weird.
Sure thing is the sure thing is like not real anymore. Like Brad Pitt isn't going to draw people to the box office. Margot Robbie, like there are no movie stars. And so because like it's just a crapshoot, like you should just, in my opinion, like why not just sort of like try something new instead of the exact same shit over and over again?
Let's talk about your movie then, big dog. What do we got? What do we got here? What can you tell us?
It's based on this novel called Erasure by Percival Everett. He's kind of having a moment for whatever reason. Like his new book, I think he just won this Penn Award. His last book, he like was shortlisted for the Booker Prize in England. So a bunch of his work is all of a sudden on people's radar, but this book was published in 2001.
So walk us through because people might not know how this process works, and I find it very interesting. So did you read the book a long time ago, always thought about it, or did you come upon it and then be like, I want to buy this?
Yeah. So I hate
the book.
I had never. Heard of Erasure until I was reading this book review for this other book called Interior Chinatown that was pretty big a couple years ago. And in the review, they said this book has satire reminiscent of Percival Everett's Erasure. And I had never heard of Erasure. So I went and read this was December 2020. So I went and I got the book and I sort of devoured it. And 50 pages in, I was like, oh, I want to adapt this. I think I want to write a script about this. And then when I was done with it, I was like, oh, maybe I could direct this too. Like I had never directed anything, but it felt like, you know, it felt like the material was.
You were really feeling yourself on the adaptation.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, I did.
You're like, I don't need anybody except if you got money, let me know. But otherwise I can do this myself.
I'm probably the only person alive who gets this.
that is kind of how I felt.
That's the way you have to feel. That's the way you have to feel to do it.
Really, really, yeah, really. Because I had never directed anything. Like, so I was, you know, it was kind of hubris to be like, yeah, I'm going to take this on. But I just fell in love with it and I didn't want anybody else to do it. I just felt like I wanted to write it and direct it. And so I reached out to Percival in January or February of 2021. He gave me the rights. They very kindly gave me the rights for free and just said like, go write a script. And if somebody buys it, then you can pay us. So
wow,
he just gave me the rights free and clear.
So you just hit him on DM and he's like, if you can sell this fucking thing, go for it, bro.
Yeah, right.
Basically,
bro, wait, when did I write this? I just, 20 years ago, bro. Yeah. Do whatever you want. Holler at me when you get some bread. Just holler at me when you get some bread.
That's how a deal should go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was very kind of him. It was great. And so So I finished the script in like May of 2021 and then we sold it. We sent it out. So then the process is we finish the script and then we just send it out to a bunch of production companies and sort of like had a bunch of meetings with producers. And one of the production companies, T Street, that I met with said in the room, they were like, we just want to make the movie because they have financing through this company called MRC. Mm-hmm. They have like a 10 picture deal with them where MRC pays for 10 movies. And so I was the third movie of the bunch.
So there's no lag time of the producers having to go get the money. They have the money.
No. So that was basically the key. We met with like nine producers and they were all very interested, but T Street was the one that was like, we're going to make the movie. So it was just less of a risk. Like I could have gone with somebody. Yeah. There was other people who were like, you know, we can get probably like $20 million for this. And it was just like, they were uncertain, you know, everybody's just like blowing smoke up your ass until you're actually doing it. But this T Street was like, we're going to make the movie. So I went with them.
Right.
So then that was June of 2021. And then we were shooting the movie like in July of last year, 2022. So I didn't know this at the time because I had never done it, but everybody's, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who say that's the fastest they've ever seen a movie come together. So, but for me, it was like, but it's like, you know, it was December 2020. So it was, you know, that's years ago at this point that I read the book, but everybody says it's a fast way for a movie to come together.
Okay.
And now we're just we're in post on it right now. It'll be out later this year.
Okay. So can you tell us who's in it? Is it somebody we know or did you get who you wanted?
It's on Deadline, like, Chris.
I want to...
I'm sure. I don't, you know, I don't research our guests, especially this fucking guy.
That's cool. That's fine.
My Hollywood Reporter subscription, unfortunately, has lapsed. So I'll use the company card, Jay, so we can share Variety and Hollywood Reporter. It's fine.
I don't want, I do not authorize this charge.
So who's in it? Yeah. Who's in it?
I got Jeffrey Wright. Jeffrey Wright's the lead. He's who I want. He's who I was thinking of when I was reading the book. Everybody realizes he's a really great actor, but he's always like Commissioner Gordon or fucking the guy in 007, the CIA dude who gets killed. So he's like, you know, him in the lead has just always been a dream of mine. I've loved him since I saw Basquiat years ago when I was in high school.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then he was in Angels in America. Like he's just great. And then Sterling K. Brown is in it. Issa Rae, Tracy Ellis Ross, and Eric Alexander are the leads. So we got
some heavy hitters.
Beefy.
Bro.
Yeah, it's a better cast than I could have ever dreamed of. Truly. I truly sent it to all those people being like, I'm never gonna get them because, you know, I thought the script was good, but like, you know, I had never directed shit and I thought people were gonna be like, fuck that, I'm not working with like this. There were a couple of people who were like, fuck that, I'm not working with the first time.
there were a couple people who said fuck off.
Yeah, it did happen. They were like, nah. But
Cord, I wanted to talk to you about Tumblr.
Oh yeah.
You're a guy who has tens of millions of dollars, but you posted a photo of Brendan Fraser passing a blunt in the on your Tumblr page within the last month or two. And I think that is a good thing to keep you grounded in life, but also, you know, what is your relationship with Tumblr? It seems like it's something you really believe in.
Tumblr is, so I dropped off of Tumblr for a while, for months and months and months, and then I got back onto it. I don't know why. I don't know why. I think that it's because Tumblr has always been... It's as far as I'm concerned, it's like the best of like Instagram and Twitter and all that shit, just because it is so, I think it's just so low stakes. Like, I think that like, I don't really like to tweet shit anymore just because fucking people get so angry and it's just like automatic. It's just like people's default settings on that is rage. And I think that Instagram is like, whatever. I don't really fuck around with that too much anymore. And I think that Tumblr is just, it's very, very sort of, you just post a stupid picture. It was Brendan Fraser as the whale, by the way.
Yeah,
it's not just, right. It's not, we have to, yeah, we have to be clear. It's not just Brendan Fraser, like school ties Brendan Fraser. It's Brendan Fraser as the
passing
whale.
Passing you a whale-sized blunt.
Yeah, he's got his mouth full of smoke. It's so full of smoke, he's tearing up, actually. The pack is so loud that he's tearing up.
We've all been there. We've all been there.
We have all been there. When the pack is so loud, it makes you cry.
But you still have a Tumblr. Don't you, Chris?
I use Tumblr every day. It's the Tumblr is truly, for me, it's because I'm kind of like a Luddite, and I find like what a lot of people use for that kind of stuff is just a little too complicated for me, and I'm like, this is the dumbest. I can drag something onto this and it goes there, and I can scroll back 10 years, and I kind of The favorite part about it, and I realized this
sounds like my mom talking about Facebook. I like this.
Yeah, exactly. But it felt like during there was one point where I scrolled back really far, and it really did like take me back. Like I remember that time in my life and like what I was doing based on what I was into and what I was working on. And I was like, this is great. It's free. It's easy. Like I don't see any downside to it. And it the interface isn't great. It's like Sonos, but you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. I just don't.
Yeah.
I also agree with you. I think it's low stakes and like thousands of people probably follow my Tumblr, but it doesn't feel real the way that Instagram, you know what I mean? It just doesn't feel
exactly
important in the same
exactly.
way. Because we've moved on thing. as a society.
Exactly. It doesn't feel important. That's why it feels low stakes. It's just like, I can just, you know, get on there stoned and just fucking scroll and put a stupid ass picture of Brendan Fraser passing.
No, don't call that image stupid. It's beautiful.
That image is not stupid.
You posted an image of Tom Cruise in Magnolia where he's playing the motivational speaker guy, and you said, you know, you captioned it like every male podcaster podcast host now.
Damn, bitch!
I'm not bringing that up.
No.
I assume that you're not referring to us or
no, that was so
I just think it's funny.
I got to tell you guys, I don't listen to podcasts much. I started reading about the Andrew Tate shit and I was like, wait a minute, is this like and then I started going into that rabbit hole of like men's rights podcasts and I couldn't believe that there were so many of them. It kind of blew my mind like how famous these people were, because I had never heard of them
before. We've been working hard, brother.
Andrew Tate is like it just feels like Frank TJ Mackey energy. Not you guys, of course, not you guys. Not you guys.
I mean, I think there's some I wasn't that aware of the Andrew Tate stuff either, honestly. Like I knew the name, you know what I mean, but like I never paid attention or really cared, because it just I could tell it wasn't for me. But now obviously since he's like been taken down, there's a different fucking BuzzFeed News 10,000 word story about him every day, and I'm just like, I don't know if I care enough to learn about this. I think I'm fine being like, that's bad and lame, I'm good, I don't need to know the ins and outs. I'm good. I just don't think it's actually that interesting. You know what I mean?
I feel the same. I got like 500 words into that 10,000 word article, and I was like, yeah, I'm out. He's a piece of shit. I'm done.
People love exposing a scammer. It'll never get old for most people. But you know, after a while, it's like the scammer was being a scammer.
I like a scammer, but I don't love like a human trafficker. That's where I mean, that's the thing. Like a scam is usually funny, especially if
too far.
If it's victimless dark scamming. Yeah, like if you're scamming fucking Bank of America, that's funny. I don't care about that. Mm-hmm. Human trafficking is pretty much across the board. Like that's not funny. Okay. It's kind of bad. And I just don't. I mean, I do think it's funny that
it's kind of bad
that his hair's grown out in prison and he's like super embarrassed about it, because he claimed that he shaved his head because it like made him look tough, and now they're like, bro, you're bald as hell. Like what the fuck? You look like shit, bro. Which is so funny that's like what people are talking about, not him being in solitary confinement for 24 hours.
That's the worst part about being in jail for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that motherfuckers can see his hairline now.
Everybody had to realize that he's bald.
Just
now.
Give me the chair, you know?
Yeah, he's like, you know what? It's fine. It's those, like, just take me. But yeah, I mean, I think that those, that like level, to me, all of those podcasts, and part of the reason I think I am able to easily avoid them is it's like YouTube is really like what it is. And I think if you don't get sucked up in the YouTube algorithm of that, then you really do have to like seek it out, which I'm obviously not going to do. And it's just like, I think that's like, that's where most of it stems from my understanding. It's not like, it's not something you just like come across on Instagram.
Yeah, I think it's just people who like watch YouTube on their phone on their like smoke break.
Yeah,
that's true.
Or like, you know, guy who works at the airport who's like taking his lunch on like a cement curb. He's like, all right, I need to level up my hustle.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in, you know, it's like if you are searching for something and that's right there and it's free and it's easy to access, it's like, I see why people get sucked in. You know, it's no different than any of the, you know, historic religions or cults or whatever. You know, it's the same. But they're promising you, you know, it really is like the way that I would rather be promised money than heaven. I don't need eternal life.
Yeah,
like, I'm good.
The church takes your money. Church takes
yeah,
your money.
I don't have to. Andrew Tate, I don't even have to tithe. Like, I don't got to give that motherfucker 10%. We're good. Like, we're good. We're just boys, you know.
Cord, you live in Silver Lake. You said
I do. Yeah.
Judging by a photo on your Tumblr, it looks like you're kind of by the reservoir. Is that correct?
I am. I'm by the reservoir.
You on a hot summer Silver Lake day, you ever get a little dog park smell wafting up, or are you
Far away, thankfully. But there's a lot of construction going on in the reservoir right now, so tough. I hear that every day.
Are you a res runner?
I'm not a res runner. I don't run outside. I only like to run inside.
What kind of freak show? I've never heard anybody in my life say that. That's the only I've never heard anybody
really.
No, the opposite. Everybody I know is like, oh, I only run outside. Like, at the treadmill, it has to be like a foot of snow on the ground in New York in the winter.
Man, I'm 41. I don't have the knees for it anymore. I'm like, I'll do treadmill all day.
He's like, I saw when you're on the treadmill, you got to look at yourself in the mirror running, and that ain't a pretty sight.
Did you grow up? Were you an athlete growing up?
Yeah, I played soccer like really frequently and competitively.
I said athlete. What about American football or anything? any real sports or just soccer?
I played football in middle school, but I was too afraid of getting hurt. Like, I was always really like a skinny kid.
Yeah, it's
and
insane.
I played football for 2 years in seventh and eighth grade, and I saw three kids on my team like shattered their bones like right in front of me. Like, one of them got his like knee bent back and snapped in half. Yeah. I watched another friend of mine like snap his arm in half. It was just like, I was like, I don't want to fight. Like,
sounds like All Quiet on the Western Front.
I was also never really into sports. Like, I don't even really like to watch sports or anything. I grew up I have like a dad and two brothers, and they're all sort of like pretty big jocks. And so there was like a lot of sports in my house, but I never really cared to watch them. And I was always like, fuck that. I don't want to get hurt playing football. So I played football. I ran track. I played volleyball. Like, I did everything, but I only really liked soccer.
So you did all the Arizona sports.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like because it was the good thing about soccer is you could just do it year round. And so because Arizona's just constantly warm, and I never got into baseball just because I thought it was fucking boring. But like, six kids from my high school that I went to high school with, like, went on to become like big professional baseball players. Yeah,
That's very Arizona shit. Do you have any connection there anymore? Do you go back, or is everybody gone?
No, my oldest brother lives there with his kids. So I go back to see them. And I've got like a bunch of good friends still in Arizona. It's just, but now half my family lives overseas. The half my family's in Saudi Arabia.
What kind of criminals are there? Are they just
Chris?
There
by come choice? On.
I'm just. What are they on the run from?
They like a desert climate. It's a desert climate.
A lot of missiles and stuff. No, my brother's a teacher. My middle brother's a school teacher. Him and his wife are both school teachers, and their kids are there. And my dad's a lawyer. We grew up there. I grew up there. Like, right after I was born, we moved from Arizona to Greece, and then we moved from Greece to Saudi Arabia. We were in Saudi Arabia until I was like six, and then we moved back to Arizona. So
that's a wild combination of cities to grow up in.
Yeah, it's very weird.
So is the vibe good over there? Like, when you go, is it like, this is sick, or is it like, I'm all set after 24 hours?
The last time I was there was I donated my kidney to my dad in 2008, and that's the last time I was there. So I haven't been back.
I was wondering when you're going to work that into the convo, Corey.
Yeah, we were talking about that. I told Jason, I was like, man, there's nothing. This guy is good looking. He's successful, and then he tells a chick he gave his dad a kidney. I'm like, bro, leave some for the rest of us. I'm like, what the fuck?
He's like, no, you can't go on top. Sorry, the kidney scar. You know what I'm saying?
It's too good, dude. It's
got a lot of sensitivity around there.
You can't make this stuff up. You can't make this stuff up.
I was there. It's like it's fine. Like, it's like there are good people there. There's a lot of really great Saudis who love their country and are smart and good people to be around. But it's not, you know, when I was, you know, 2008, I'm in my mid 20s. I was like, I was so bored. Like, there's no.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I was there, there's no movie theaters. There's no like, restaurants are segregated by gender.
There's no union pool or anything.
No union pool to go into. Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of like, you know, you just like, the thing that young men do there for fun when I was there, at least, was like, you know, Dunkin' Donuts would be open until like 6 in the morning. And like, you'd see a bunch of like dudes in their 20s. They're like smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee and playing cards like all night. Whoa. That's what they did.
Sounds like Glendale. I got to go to Saudi Arabia.
Jason's like, damn, it probably rains less in Saudi Arabia. This sounds good. Yeah.
And it's illegal to have guns and knives in Saudi Arabia, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I got to go. Because I'm living in constant danger over here of being stabbed.
I've just never been to them. I've never been. I've been to some places.
Have you been to like Dubai?
No, I'm very interested in going. I wanna get paid by some shady corporation to go there and post on Instagram, you know. But I think that Dubai to me just looks like Vegas and feels like you're like inside all the time in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I'm sure they got a Carbone there. How bad can it be? You know, I'm sure it's fine.
That's a long ass flight to go to Carbone is the only thing that's really keeping me, you know.
It's a tough table in South Beach. Sometimes you gotta get on the plane. Right. You gotta do what you gotta do.
I can do the Emirates, but yeah. I also wanted to talk to you. You said that you're not really on social media too much anymore, so that kind of ruins the question. But I was noticing that your profile picture on your Instagram seemed to be of a different time period in your life, and I was wondering if maybe your PR agent told you to not change your profile pic, or were you just being lazy, or did you think you looked dope in a tank top?
No, it's just lazy. It's just pure laziness. It's just like, that's the first thing that I put up on Instagram. But I am, so I don't want to lie and say that I'm never on social media. That's not true.
There's some girls listening right now, like, DM still works over here. he's active.
This looks like he's on social media to me.
I just
got the green circle.
I just don't post shit because that, like, it's like, I just, yeah, it feels like too much of a headache sometimes. I'm just like, this is just, I don't want
to. And as a writer, it's not necessarily part of your job to post on.
Yeah. And when you engage with people, like, again, like, I just feel like the default setting on the internet so much is just like fucking anger. And also like,
no, you're right.
Classic or trash.
Be the most. Yeah. Trying to be the most ungenerous you can be when sort of like reading someone's words. And I'm just like, I don't want to engage with this. So I look at it a lot, but I don't post things really.
I like ungenerous.
That's how it feels.
No, that's a good way to put it. I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. And also, I mean, I think that we've all, in a lot of ways, like, made it part of our jobs, you know, like, where it maybe necessarily could have gone a different way, but we all kind of leaned in at a certain point. And I think you truly exist in a world where it's like, yeah, I don't really have to do this.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. Like, it does not make a difference. Like, it doesn't help or it doesn't hurt.
Whereas it's Chris sort of has created a job in social media to justify his crippling social media addiction.
Yeah, exactly. I'm on Twitter more than any human should be, but it doesn't really bother. I don't know. It doesn't, like, the way people talk about it, I just think it's like funny. Like, I don't mind if it's like that my algorithm's all fucked up and it's, I'm not seeing people I follow and Elon did this. I'm like, who cares, guys? Like, this is a free service that's funny. Like, what do we, like, you can't, like, I just don't understand. Like, if you don't like it.
Do people talk shit to you though? Like, about, like, I feel like, because now you guys are in your jobs are ones that you say your opinions constantly, right? So you're like, yeah, constantly talking about things you like and dislike. And so are people constantly picking fights with you on Twitter because of that?
Not so much me, more Chris, but not that much.
No, I mean, people definitely think I'm an idiot and don't, like, most people listen to this podcast think I'm dumb and don't agree with anything I have to say. But like, they don't tell me that on Twitter. It's just kind of an understood, you know what I mean? Jason tells me every day, but they don't really tell me directly. No, I mean, I just think it's like, that's the whole thing in our world. It's not like I'm saying things that are like offensive. It's just like, if I don't like something and I say it, then that somebody thinks that's insane.
Yeah.
Which is like, I don't think it's insane for someone to not like, you know, Wilco. Like, I get it. You don't fucking like Wilco. I do. We're all good, bro. I don't give a shit. Like, that's fine. We're moving on. You know, but there's people that really care, and like, that bothers them. You know?
I looked, I saw on Twitter the other day that, like, it was like, did you see that everybody was pissed because some guy said that he thought Meg White was a bad drummer, and it was just, and she started trending,
and we talked about this.
Do people really care this much? Like, A, I think it's crazy to care enough about Meg White's drumming to talk shit about her on Twitter. But then B, like it was
both,
like,
all of it.
Everything was weird.
Slow news day.
That's a perfect example, though, of something that goes viral. The guy has to like, the guy's going to get doxxed, you know, probably because then it turns into like, you hate women. You know what I mean? You're like, whoa. I was just saying, I didn't really like her drumming. Like, it was kind of not my thing. It's a little jerky stylistically. You know?
But the interesting difference is like, if somebody posted that with like an emoji of like the like a bashful person and it says like unpopular opinion, Meg is overrated, nobody would, they'd be like, I disagree, and that's about it. But if it's like a straight white man who's like, this is happening, this fucking chick sucks at drumming, and everyone's like, wait a fucking minute, you know, people love, you know, it's just, it's a beautiful thing to debate, you know, it's a fun thing to debate because she is a terrible drummer. But is that what makes it good? You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's a fun thing to debate. That's why
I also, but I, the thing that I also was like, when did everybody become fucking like drum teachers? Like, it's like how the fuck do you know? Like, what,
you don't know
what
shit.
What are your bona fides to like, yeah, to that you can sort of like, yeah.
I had no idea you were a master of rhythm.
Yeah. John exactly. Bonham is back and he's on Twitter. I mean, I think it's a little bit of like anything. It's just like, it's the way everybody became a doctor.
Well, we all became experts. We all became experts in the San Vicente Bungalows bank run, you know, like
yeah,
the SVB, you know, we all became, you know, financial analysts overnight. You know, we become drum experts overnight.
Truly, it's insane.
Yeah, it's what the internet. I mean, honestly, the COVID stuff was the ultimate peak of that, where people really thought they knew what the answers were. And it's like, dude, you're a fucking barista. Like, you barely have the answers to what kind of milk you got. Like, you don't have the answers to infectious diseases.
You don't even have the bathroom code.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But like, I think it's just like, this is where we're at, because there's so much information out there that people can truly do spend their time like learning things and not realize that still doesn't make you a fucking expert.
Yeah,
like it's still an opinion.
It can get you it can get you close enough to feel like you are one, though.
Totally. I it's just like, you know, it's a very interesting, especially with things like music, where it's like completely taste based.
Yeah,
like with medical things, or you know, that's fact based. With me, it's fully just like, do I like this or not? There's so many reasons how I come to that decision. It has nothing to do with anyone else. It's strictly like, you know, my upbringing and how I came to it, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, Meg White, I mean, she's got the sauce. I wouldn't say it's technical, but you know, that doesn't matter.
Clearly didn't matter.
All right, Cord, with all of our guests at the end of the episode, we like to do a game where our guest tells us their top three favorite prescription pills.
Top three favorite prescription pills. Is this really what you do?
Yeah, all the time.
Only with guests that are cool. You know what I mean?
I take a bunch of pills for my heart. So the first one, my number one pill is Flecainide. My antiarrhythmic.
Hell yeah, bro.
The Flecainide outbreak has been ravaging our country.
Yeah. I know on Fridays you want to snort the fleckies, but don't snort the fleckies. That might fuck you up. That might make your heart worse, bro. You gotta
So every day you take it and you don't die, you're just like, damn, I'm fucking high as hell.
So every day I take this it, my heart stays in rhythm. That's okay. It, man.
So that's
what a high that must be.
Yeah. And then diltiazem, it's a beta blocker also for my heart, so that's number two.
Okay.
And then number three is a new one in my life. It's Zoloft. I just started taking Zoloft last year, and it's been life changing.
He's a Zohead.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that.
Well, I take the generic ones.
Okay.
The sertralins or whatever. If we're talking just like recreational pills,
typically, but we can do yours as well.
I think that my. Well, I was never really a pill guy. Like they always made me, like, I remember my friends brought a bunch of Xanax when we were in our 20s to New York, and it was like muscle relax. I can't remember what it was. Oh, it's probably somas. That's what we used to eat, a bunch of somas in.
Yeah.
Because I grew up in Tucson, so we were like an hour away from the Mexican border. And so we spent a lot of time in Mexico when I was in high school. Baby. We spent a lot of time in Mexico when I was in high school.
My friend, Soma.
Yeah, and so we went to Nogales a lot. So there was a lot of time spent in Nogales, going to pharmacies in Nogales. And so when I did do recreational pills in high school, it was generally Somas. And it was
classic.
A lot of bad times. I don't think I was ever like this was a good idea to take these pills tonight.
When you wake up at 1:30 p.m. the next day with piss all over your fucking University of Arizona basketball shorts, it's fucked up.
You're like, oh, Soma.
Exactly.
Not again.
Yeah, no. It was a lot of like sitting around terrible bars in Nogales and like my high school girlfriend like yelling at me and me just being like so zoned out. I had no idea what was going on.
I want to fucking go home, Cord, and you're like, what?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm drooling.
My foot doesn't work for gas pedal, babe.
Dude, chill. You gotta chill.
You just gotta chill. What's wrong with you? No, Cord, thank you for joining us today on How Long Gone. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, this was overdue. And let's all hang when we're back in LA.
I would love that. And Jason, let's get dinner sometime in Los Angeles.
It's a freaking day, bro.
We'll do it. We'll talk to you soon, Cord. Thanks again, bro.
Good, boys. Have a good one. Thank you. Bye-bye.